This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up. But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Time now for Mego and Shime on WEEI.
Two sources at the University of North Carolina tell me that there has been a decision. It was made last week by the higher-ups inside the athletic department that had hired Bill Belichick to be the highest-paid public employee, not just coach, in the state of North Carolina at $10 million a year. And that decision was that Jordan Hudson is no longer allowed in the football building.
Okay.
She is not allowed on the football field.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, don't think you'll be hearing much from Jordan moving forward. The second update is that Bill Belichick's family is extraordinarily concerned about what has transpired.
Mego and Shime here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. That was Pablo Torre on his podcast talking about Jordan Hudson and the sources he has spoken to claiming that she is no longer allowed in the UNC football building. UNC then later that day put out a statement saying that that is not the case. Jordan is welcome in all of the UNC facilities and blah, blah, blah. And Pablo then quote tweeted their statement and was like, I have 11 different sources that claim that she is not allowed anywhere near that building anymore. And then Bill Belichick at his most recent book event, I believe it was, had a former NFL PR exec with him, not Jordan Hudson. Mego, what on earth is going on here? This seems like an absolute nightmare. You can probably take a good stab in the dark and guess on who the family member that is unhappy with the situation is and all those things. What is your current read on the Bill Belichick Jordan situation?
Well, if I may, allow me to read off some more of the Pablo Torre tweets that he fired off after the UNC. This is from, again, the Dan Patrick Show. He said, quote, one person said, she is the worst person I've ever dealt with on earth. And I've dealt with actual sociopaths. I'm not saying that is everyone. I'm just saying this story is extreme. She is the worst person I've dealt with on earth. Here's another one. So as you said, I talked to 11 people who dealt directly with Jordan Hudson as she took power in Bill Belichick's life. A lot is getting aggregated from this episode. Here's another one. According to Pablo Torre's sources, one of Jordan Hudson's biggest concerns about the CBS interview, that's of course the one that came out 2 weeks ago at this point, CBS Sunday Morning, how that fallout might affect her chances in this weekend's Miss Maine USA pageant. Quote, she has been very concerned to the point of explicitly telling Bill Belichick and others that this whole disaster is actively undermining her chances to win the Miss Maine competition.
She does realize, just for clarification's sake, she does realize She's the reason why that CBS interview was a disaster.
Pablo Torre says, P.S., UNC can now choose to describe or change its position on Jordan Hudson's involvement however it wishes following the publication of our episode. We requested comment and filed dozens of FOIA, that's Freedom of Information Act, requests that were not satisfied, and we stand by the specific reporting in our episode, which came from the highest levels of the football program.
Unbelievable.
So not just UNC, the football program that Bill Belichick is supposedly running down there.
What a nightmare this is. How has this guy, who was once deemed like the Darth Vader of the NFL, now had his life like basically taken control of by a 24-year-old? How does this happen?
It happens all the time, Shime.
Does it? Like,
yes,
to this extent?
It does. I'm sorry. Have you never had something in your extended family or a friend's family where there is an older person and they have a romantic involvement or sometimes a business involvement where that person, and in this case it seems to be delving into both, that person latches on to them like a parasite and just drains it?
Sure, but like, I don't know. It's Bill Belichick.
That's the shocking part.
That's the part that is hard to kind of comprehend.
Like, on the one hand, I'm sorry, these comments are funny. It's funny that someone said this 24-year-old girl,
I believe,
who was a henna tattoo artist, is the worst person that they've ever dealt with.
Also, was there not also one of Pablo Torre's reports that, like, she forced herself to be involved in a commercial shoot.
And the Dunkin' commercial.
But a different one.
Oh.
And the filming crew basically gave her the okie doke and like filmed her, but that never used the footage.
Let's just do this for her. Give her one take.
She seems like a nightmare.
There's a side of this, as I said, with these comments, these stories, worst person I've ever dealt with. She's a former Bridgewater State University cheerleader who seems to be taking over Bill Belichick's entire life and reputation. And a side of that is very funny. But when you think back to who Bill Belichick was 10 years ago, it's very sad. How did he fall this way? How did he fall this way? This is a man who I was blessed and very lucky to have a one-on-one interview with one time. And I stood in a room where they had spotlights set up. They had one handler and they had one camera person. And when I tell you, my knees were knocking against each other because I was so nervous to talk to Bill Belichick. Like, I was terrified. Like, this force in football, in the history of football, this genius. Like, there's so much that he's accomplished. And now he is a punchline. Now he is TMZ. Now, like, in a way that we rarely see anymore in public life. I say it happens all the time in private life. Everybody has a sad situation where somebody in their family is taken advantage of or somebody they know, or they're like, what's going on? Suddenly this person's gotten really weird. We all have seen that. You never saw this coming 10 years ago.
Well, and the crazy thing, too, is it's like I look at this and I just see a guy who spent his career preaching to his players and teams, no distractions.
Yeah.
Like, we are a football program. We are worried about football. Let us make our primary focus at all times football. And now it's like he is, and his girlfriend by proxy, like, are the biggest distractions to UNC football imaginable. Like, it is everywhere. TMZ, Pablo Torre, doesn't matter. Bill Belichick and Jordan Hudson are everywhere. It is a massive, massive distraction for a man. All his entire coaching tenure has preached nothing but avoid the distractions.
Absolutely. And it really makes him, from the Instagram posts to how all of this is being handled or mishandled, it makes him look phony. It makes him look so phony compared to who he was. And that's why I think some people are jumping to the conclusion of, like, I'm not going here. But some people, you know, you hear like, oh, is he well? Like, Keith is joking around about, like, if this was my father, I'd be like, is this elder abuse?
Yeah.
You know, there is a tendency to that because we feel like what we knew about him for decades here was that he was so controlled. He was militaristic. He was born and then raised in Annapolis, and that he, that is his way of life and that he was completely buttoned up. And now this is bizarre.
Now, I think it does raise the question, does he ever coach it down for the UNC Tar Heels?
Yes. Yes, I do. Okay. I do think he does.
So you think this will not change anything in which any part of his standing with UNC, they won't in any way force him to quit or anything like
oh,
that?
Oh, Shime, they can't even commit to reporting that Pablo Torre did. Immediately, they're putting out statements, Jordan's welcome everywhere, Jordan.
Like, but if this continues down this role, down this path, does it eventually snowball to a point of no return?
Not this season.
You don't think so?
He gets at least a season. I would be surprised if he still doesn't at least appear to have everything on his own terms because they bent over backwards for him. And the people down there are not like the people up here, okay? No, I have a very good friend who was born and raised and lives in Chapel Hill and lives there, has returned back there. And she's like, it's a circus around him down here, but people love him. Like, everything he does, he's such a big celebrity for them and for the football program. It's not the basketball program.
So they love the attention.
It's the football program. They I think that they know that there's a side of this that's embarrassing. But at the same time, Bill Belichick is the biggest brand that school has had since who? You know, like, it's not the same down there as it is up here with the level of his publicity. He's the most, far and away, the most famous person who's lived in that town, the last 50 years?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. Like, he's bigger at this point. He's probably bigger than Coach K was at Duke.
Oh, absolutely.
So, yes, they're not going to, over his 24-year-old girlfriend, they're not going to just say, like, this is far too embarrassing for us. Bill's not coaching here anymore. Like, come on.
This also, though, it's like for any of those people who thought that UNC would be a launching pad back to the NFL,
nope.
Seems like a very, very slim proposition.
If that was a dream, that dream is dead.
Oh, it is so dead. It is 6 feet under. Like it's not even close.
That I think he's never going to be back in the NFL.
No.
Which makes me sad on one side because, again, there is a side of this that's very funny. Comedy and tragedy are very close.
There's
a side to it that is very sad because you go, what's happening? Is he okay? Like, what? How could this person take so much advantage? And then the other side of it is like, well, it's funny because she seems awful. She seems horrible. And there is a part of me that was scrolling because I'm going to be in Maine this weekend.
Oh.
Because, you know, I'm like basically a part-time resident up there. And I'm like, the Holiday Inn is having the Miss Maine competition.
Are you going to be on the hunt for Jordan?
Do I go and see Jordan on Sunday?
Try and talk to her?
I kind of want to.
Get her side of the story.
But at the same time,
be that Big J journalist, Mega.
At the same time, like, it is Mother's Day, and it's my one day off this week, and I would like to spend it with my mother, who does not want to see Jordan.
She doesn't? She doesn't want to come with you to the Miss Maine pageant?
I wonder what bar, if you're in the Maine area, if you're especially in the Portland, Maine area, where are we most likely to catch Jordan out? Because it's one thing to see Jordan in the pageant, whatever. There's going to be 100
She's not definitely not going to be at any of the great breweries that Portland has to offer.
No.
Fantastic breweries.
I'm thinking like there's a dumpling and champagne bar there. I'm thinking that might be the kind of spot that she goes to.
Ooh, there's a nice Italian joint on a cobblestone street there in Portland.
Every place in the old port is cobblestone, Shime. Are you talking about Via Vecchia?
That's the one. Yes.
Via Vecchia.
I had dinner there with the Greg Hill Show one night. It was delightful. Beautiful
Some
spot.
Of the best martinis. Probably my favorite martini in Portland.
That sounds like a Jordan drink is a martini, right?
Don't be like that. Martinis are... Do you not drink martinis?
No, I'm not saying martinis are bad, but I just feel like
question.
No, I don't drink martinis.
You need to get after martinis. You're in your 30s now. It's a martini decade.
I'm just not a big martini guy.
Like, why?
Well, okay. So first of all,
have you ever had one?
No.
Okay.
No, I haven't.
Shine.
I honestly, I can't even tell you necessarily exactly what is in the concoction that consists of a martini. It's never been my style.
Blythe and Burroughs. That's another great call for a possible bar.
Ooh. Okay. There you go. I just always in my life, I've been a big beer guy. Love a good crafty. I love a regular beer, you know, and just your Joe Schmo beer. That's fine with me. I also am a big tequila guy. I love tequila. I love margaritas. I'm not too good for a wonderful $5 margarita.
Here's my feeling, and I think this is why the 30s and probably your 40s and probably the rest of my life become a martini decade.
Yep.
Is that I love a margarita too, but based on the margarita, like, I might be sick the next morning.
That's true.
Off
there
one
is
margarita.
A much wider array of outcomes.
I have no idea. Is there simple syrup in there? Is it premix? What's
that's
going
true.
On?
That's a good
like,
point.
Is it? I don't know.
You got to know
with
what
a
you're
martini,
getting.
I know if I'm getting my Tito's martini slightly dry with a lemon twist, I know exactly what's going to be in there, and I know how I'm going to respond.
I don't
it's
even
like,
know what that means.
I can be on the level. I know, okay, if I have one of these, I'm great. If I have one and a half, I'm even more charming. If I have two, I'm probably throwing up in an Uber.
Where do you like, stand on espresso martinis?
A lot of variants.
Okay.
A lot of variants. The espresso martini is quite like the Celtics three-point shooting game. When it's good, you can't beat it.
It's the best in the business.
When it's good, you can't beat it. You've never seen anything like it. When it's bad, it makes you want to barf.
Okay. What is it? Like, if I were to get an espresso martini, what would I be expecting? Is it like coffee-ish?
Have
is
you
it just,
not had an espresso martini?
No, I told you I've never had a martini. That includes all martinis.
Do you live?
Yeah, I live. Like, I'm alive. I believe. Hold on. Let me check my pulse. Can confirm I am alive.
Okay. Here's what you want to do
not
with an
undead.
Espresso martini.
Okay.
Because there's a lot, again, a lot of variants around the espresso martinis.
Yeah, yeah.
First of all, you want to make sure that you're ordering at a bar that has an espresso machine. This sounds very stupid.
No, no, no.
But there
makes
are
a
lots
lot of sense.
Bars where you'd go, and if you look at the menu and you actually read the description of the espresso martini, it's espresso-flavored vodka or espresso-flavored drink. That is not
that.
An espresso martini.
Okay.
You want something with real espresso in it.
Okay.
So make sure that they can make the espresso and that that's part of it. If it's a fresh espresso machine, that's going to be a great martini. On top of that, you say, make it dark. You don't want a creamy espresso martini. Then you're basically just getting like a watery milkshake.
Because what is in an espresso martini aside from the espresso?
You can have Bailey's, you can have Kahlua, you can have, but anything that you have of that, you want it to be very, very minimal. It needs to basically be espresso and vodka. What we're talking about here is a grown-up's Red Bull and vodka. That's what you want.
Interesting. So it's just espresso, vodka, and like a dash of coffee liqueur.
Yes. That's what you want.
Okay.
That's and then it's great if they have like a little whipped topping. I do like a little bit of that.
Okay.
I do like just a little bit. And then the beans. But that's the order you want to go with.
Make sure
you ask for it dark and make sure it's real espresso.
Because I am super, Wiggy would call me old. I am super old for, I love coffee ice cream.
Okay.
Does that mean I would really like an espresso martini?
I think so.
Because I also like vodka. Vodka's great.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think you should have one tonight at your Pokemon party.
Oh, that's right. I'm going. So it's not a party, but I am going to the grand opening of a Pokemon exclusive store in Manchester, New Hampshire. Shout out to Collectible Tags. I'll be popping through there later today because your boy needs to check it out.
Okay. I need to think about, here's one more thing before we go to break, because I know that we have to, and we're going to talk to Sean McAdam about actual sports.
Yeah, yeah, real sports.
About Rafael Devers and the Red Sox in about 10 minutes, so you don't want to miss that, because he's very awesome and will give us good perspective of what's actually going on in that clubhouse.
For sure.
But if I'm looking for Jordan, I got to be looking Sunday night, right? Because she's not going to go out Saturday night before the beauty pageant.
No, no, no. It would be post-beauty pageant. It's either a, I need a drink because I lost, or it's time to celebrate.
Okay.
So it might be two different places. You might have to be prepared for two different spots. There might be a celebratory spot, and there might be a, damn, I just need to like drink in a dark bar kind of spot for a sad day, a mourning, if you will.
I'm just worried that she's just going to leave immediately.
She could. I mean, Chapel Hill is probably way nicer than Portland. Portland's a beautiful place.
Yeah, don't
but
you say that about
But
Portland.
Like Chapel Hill's weather right now is
probably
much
better.
Nicer.
Probably better.
So, do you think Bill makes the trip too?
No. I don't think Bill's doing that. I think Bill, for as bad as things are right now, I mean, even if he goes, he hangs out in the hotel suite the whole
time.
Yeah,
he's too busy with his book.
I don't think he's showing up in
public.
His book
tour. Yeah, I think you're right.
If he shows up in public for this, I will die laughing.
I got to say, Courtney and Wiggy were onto something yesterday. I was convinced that she was going to post a picture from within the UNC football facility yesterday, like on Instagram, just like as a big, like giant middle finger to all the haters. And we didn't get that. And I was kind of depressed.
She's probably already up here.
Oh, you're right. She's probably preparing, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Well, 617-779-7937. Mego and Shime here on WEEI. We're going to get back into the Red Sox talking Rafael Devers with Sean McAdam next. But right now, Mitch is going to get caught up with what is trending.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
The Red Sox fall back down to 500 after a 2-1 extra innings loss in last night's series finale in KC. Hunter Dobbins got the start, going six shutout innings, allowing five hits while striking out six. Devers with an RBI ground out in the 11th, accounting for the lone score for the Sox. They'll look to bounce back tonight when Garrett Crochet takes the mound opposite Royals ace Cole Ragans. You can hear coverage of that one right here on WEI and across the Stars and Star Market, WEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's perfecting the art of fresh. Joe Weil with you to get started at 6:10 on the Mass Mutual pregame show. Then Will Fleming and Lenny DiNardo will have the call. First pitch from Kauffman Stadium set for 7:10. The Celtics will look to climb back into their second-round series against the Knicks this afternoon when they head to Madison Square Garden for Game 3. Only one injury to report on the Celtics side. They're listing Sam Hauser as doubtful. Tip-off in Game 3 from MSG set for 3:30. Elsewhere in the NBA, the Cavs cut the Pacers series lead in half with a 126-104 win in Indiana. And the Nuggets took a 2-1 lead over the top-seeded Thunder with a 113-104 win. While over in the NHL, Brad Marchand netted the OT winner for Florida as they beat the Maple Leafs 5-4 to cut the Toronto series down to lead to 2-1. The Jets also getting a win at home 4-0 to even up their series with the Dallas Stars 1-1. Finally, Saints quarterback Derek Carr has announced his retirement after 11 NFL seasons. Carr was set to miss the entire 2025 season with a shoulder injury. I am Mitch Sabatelli, and that's what's trending.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Factormeals.com/listen50, code LISTEN50.
Baseball's number one digital destination is the MLB app. And this app's got game. Like game highlights, live games, fantasy games, and more.
The gem of a game!
This is baseball your way. With stats, scores, breaking news, and daily custom content that hits every time.
A monster shot!
Because here, you choose the teams and pick the players you want to follow.
All year long.
So when they catch it on the field,
what a catch!
You catch it on the MLB app. Download today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Now, more of Mego and Shine on WEEI.
Mego and Shine here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Did a lot of martini talk in that last segment, so let's try and get back to sports a little
yes,
bit, Mego.
Yes, please, this dumb girl. Get her off the radio.
Forget about her. But
so annoying.
It's back to a little bit of a discussion on Rafael Devers and the Boston Red Sox. They are facing the Royals today. Cole Ragans against Garrett Crochet. Big Crochet day, if you will, for the Boston Red Sox. But the big issue has been Rafael Devers and this unwillingness to more or less be a team player and even consider the idea of playing first base. It has been what seems like just a nightmare for them, to the point where John Henry, Sam Kennedy, and Craig Breslow flew to Kansas City to have a meeting with Rafael Devers.
We really haven't discussed that enough.
No.
That side of it.
I think that's such a big thing. Like, John Henry, a guy who is very hands-off for the most part and really hasn't done much outside of Instagram post a picture of him smoking a cigar in the last 12 months, flew and was the more or less the biggest voice in the room when talking to Rafael Devers about this entire situation. And it feels like, to me, if he's doing that, it's because he's asking Rafael to kind of have a team-first mentality, right?
Right. So Chris Cotillo of MassLive, who is the coworker, the colleague of Sean McAdam, who we're going to talk to in just a couple minutes here, he tweeted yesterday, John Henry, Sam Kennedy, and Craig Breslow flew to Kansas City today. Henry met with Rafael Devers one-on-one about his comments yesterday. Breslow called it, quote, an honest exchange. So I guess a couple questions I have here. One, Henry had the one-on-one conversation with Rafael Devers, and that feels very significant.
Yes, it does.
Because it means your boss's boss's boss is now involved. And if that's what's going down, you're in deep crap. You're in a bad place.
Yep.
If you're Rafael Devers. And the other side of it is Breslow called it an honest exchange. Well, what does he know? He wasn't in the conversation. So he's just getting John Henry comes out of it and says, yes, we spoke about hard topics, but it was honest.
Unless there was more conversation that everybody was in the room for, but John Henry was just the one speaking to Rafael Devers.
It said one-on-one. When somebody says one-on-one, I assume that's a conversation between two people.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But like at the same time, I kind of look at it and it... Why is this? I guess I don't understand why all this came to the front office and fell on Craig Breslow's lap to even talk to him in the first place.
Well, because Devers called him out.
Yeah, but no. But even before that, like, why didn't Alex Cora talk to him about this?
You don't think he did?
It doesn't seem like it. When Alex Cora was asked about it, he says, "No, I haven't even talked to him about it. Okay. I don't really plan on it."
But when was that? That was three days ago.
Wednesday.
When he was on with the afternoon show is
yes.
what you're talking about?
No. So that's when he kind of walked it back
okay.
with the afternoon show and was like, never say never. It was Tuesday that he said, no, I haven't even talked to him about it. I haven't even broached the subject with him. I don't really intend to.
So then
and then all of a sudden, Craig Breslow is the one doing it?
Well, then I think the question becomes, whose idea was it to True. Move Rafi to first base? Is that a night, because Alex Cora says it's not really on the plate for him. And then he walks it back with the afternoon show and says, we'll never say never. And is that coming from the front office saying, why don't you just move Devers over there? It's the easiest position on the field defensively. And he's making over $300 million in these 10 years.
Mego and Shime here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. We're joined now by Mass Live's Sean McAdam. Sean, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
I'm well, guys. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. If you could, please, lend us just any kind of insight into this whole Rafael Devers situation. We know that John Henry, Craig Breslow, Sam Kennedy flew out to Kansas City to meet with Rafael Devers and talk to him. Kind of, can you give us any more insight into exactly what maybe that conversation entailed and exactly their perspective on how Rafael Devers is handling this whole asking to play first base situation?
Yeah, well, I'm told that it was John Henry's idea to do that, which I would take if I were a Red Sox fan, I would see that as a positive development, that there's some engagement on the part of John Henry and some investment beyond his checkbook to monitor how things are going with the team. I think that even the suggestion in the last couple of years that he would have flown halfway across the country to address a situation like this may have been hard to fathom. So the fact that he came up with the idea to go kind of tackle this head on, I think is probably a positive one in the big picture. I'm not sure that we're going to get to an easy resolution of this anytime soon. I suspect that we're going to see a little bit of a detente here in the next couple of weeks where it quiets down for a while. just as it did back in spring training when there was the initial kerfluffle over Devers being moved off third to DH. Eventually, cooler heads prevailed a little bit. I think Alex Cora did some behind-the-scenes diplomacy and got Devers to buy in a little bit more. And maybe we'll see a repeat of that, but I wouldn't expect anything dramatic to come out of this. I think the goal yesterday was to bring the temperature down and maybe push the restart button and see where that takes us.
Sean, thanks for joining us. Really a pleasure having you on with all your insights. We were just talking about trying to figure out where the motivation for this move came from. Was this something, in your understanding, that Alex Cora wanted to try Devers at first base, or was this an idea that came from elsewhere?
I would say, Megan, that it was more generated by baseball ops and Craig Breslow in particular. And I say that for a couple of reasons. One is that publicly, Cora seemed to reject the notion of that possibility. I think he realized what he had to go through to get Devers to accept the DH role back in spring training. And he finally kind of puts that fire out. And now here's the potential for another one. And he didn't have the appetite to go through that right again, which I understand. But I do think it was somewhat telling and a little curious that it was Breslow making the approach to Devers. Obviously, it wasn't a successful one, but that's not usually the chain of command, you would say, in an organization. If this were something contractual or something to do with a trade or free agency or kind of big picture thing, then yes, it would be entirely appropriate for a chief baseball officer to be the one having the conversation with the player. Usually, if it's a between the lines on the field kind of issue, as changing positions would be, then that's the task taken on by the manager. He's the guy who's in the clubhouse every day. He's on the bus, in the hotel, on the flight. He's with them all the time. He's got to build and maintain relationships with players. And ordinarily, that would be handled by the manager. But as I noted, I think that Cora, perhaps seeing that this was only going to lead to some disruption and that maybe more time needed to pass before this was broached, either deferred to Breslow to make the request himself or out and out refused to do it. And, you know, that in itself is worth kind of tracking to see what the relationship between Breslow and Cora is going forward.
So, Sean, in spring training, we saw Rafael Devers say, no, I'm a third baseman. I'm not going to play DH. And then ultimately ended up becoming the DH for the Boston Red Sox. Do you see this situation playing out similarly or different in that will Rafael Devers ever even play a game at first base for the Boston Red Sox?
Chris, I'm not sure about that. I don't know where we're going to, where it's ultimately going to land. I think the key difference here is, you know, going from third base to DH, while it may not be as simple as some fans believe it to be, and we've heard everybody who's been a DH, from Edgar Martinez to David Ortiz, admit that it isn't for everyone because there's a routine that gets changed. Some guys never make the adjustment particularly well. They don't adapt to sitting in the dugout for a couple of innings in between at bats. Some guys get in their heads a little too much when things aren't going well. They're not able to contribute on the field defensively, and they put too much pressure on themselves for every at bat. So far, Devers seems to have figured that part of it out. But this move from DH to first base, a position that he hasn't played before, has the potential for more risk. You can embarrass yourself. You can make costly misplays or errors that could cost your team. He went from, you know, playing a position that he was very familiar with to not playing one at all. And yes, that was a change. but this is going from hitting only to being asked to take on a position that he's never played at any level. So it's more complicated, and I suspect if we get to that scenario that you cited of Devers taking some ground balls and maybe even playing some games there, or maybe becoming their everyday first baseman for the rest of the year, but that's going to take a little time, not only because it involves a bigger leap here, but obviously because there's some bruised feelings at work that have to be taken into consideration.
So, Sean, a few years ago, we saw Kyle Schwarber make that change from playing the outfield to playing first base, and he wasn't, you know, the best first baseman we've ever seen here at Fenway Park, but he did it, and he did it for the team first. Did anybody kind of approach Devers with that perspective? Like, look, he became beloved by fans and by the team because he was willing to put the team first in that situation. Was that ever kind of given to Devers as a positive in this situation instead of just being intimidated by the possibility of making, embarrassing himself?
Yeah, that's a good question, and we don't know what got relayed behind closed doors. It does not seem as if Breslow had much interaction with Devers yesterday in Kansas City, that it was largely Cora and John Henry speaking to him. But in his conversations with reporters, Breslow did note that part of the purpose of the meeting was to remind Devers the importance of being a good teammate. So I'm wondering if that was kind of along the lines of what you're talking about, although it sounds a little more scolding than it does them pointing out that there are benefits to being able to make this jump, and they involve bettering the team, helping your own teammates, and yes, maybe getting a little more public goodwill back on your side. No idea whether that that element of the argument was presented, but it did seem as if that was very front of mind to Breslow to remind him, maybe in a kind way or in a gentle way, that there are expectations for players regarding the rest of their teammates and the team that pays them.
So, Sean, you wrote a little bit about how this really goes back to the drama that started in February, as you said, with moving Devers from third base to designated hitter. You said that it sounds like Alex Cora did not want to be the one to have the conversation with Devers about now possibly playing some games at first base. I got to ask, are you surprised by the level of sloppiness in some of these relationships or just communication? And when you look at that, where do you think the breakdown is really coming from behind closed doors, where you have a situation that looks bad in February? And obviously this is a different situation that was you're less able to plan for with Tristan Casas's injury at first base, but it's kind of like rinse and repeat with the same frustrations within the building, it sounds like.
Yeah, good point, Megan. And I think that we can even trace some of the problems back prior to the signing of Bregman. And I think that's where a lot of the distrust felt by Devers was initially sown. Over the winter, it was obvious to anyone in the game that the Red Sox were being pretty aggressive in seeking some upgrades at third base, not necessarily because they were intent on getting Devers off third, although that was obviously a side effect of what they were doing. It's just that they needed a right-handed bat. And it happened that two of the more obvious targets to do that were both third basemen, Bregman and Nolan Arenado with St. Louis. The Red Sox engaged in trade talks with Arenado, with the Cardinals. They got as far as talking about potential names, how much money they'd be willing to take off the Cardinals' hands in such a deal. And they were obviously negotiating with Scott Boras for a deal with Bregman back and forth for weeks and months until they finally signed him after camp opened. And yet, whenever the topic came up with Devers and his representatives over the offseason, the communication was, no, that's just media speculation. Don't pay any attention to that. And Devers believed them up until the time that Bregman got signed 2 days after camp opened, and he was coming in, and although there had been some talk about, well, he could move to second, it seemed pretty obvious from the jump that Bregman was brought in to replace Devers at third. I think 90% of the problems the Red Sox have with Rafael Devers stem from them not being upfront enough about what they were trying to accomplish in the offseason. And frankly, they should have learned, you know, they should know better. It's not an easy conversation to have to say, yeah, we're thinking about bringing in somebody who's going to move you off your preferred position. But it even if it's a tough message to sell, it's a lot easier than digging out from the fact that he knows you lied to him for a good part of the winter. And now he wonders if he can trust the single thing that comes out of a team employee's mouth. And I think, as I said, that is a huge part of where we are today.
So we know John Henry flew out there. We kind of get that aspect of it. But I'm curious your perspective on how the rest of the clubhouse feels. Are they more do you feel like a lot of guys will side with Rafael Devers in that, hey, the organization has been lying to him now, it feels like, for months, and it's hard to trust anything they say? Or are they more kind of upset with Devers in not being team first and being willing to even try to play first base here?
I don't think there's an across-the-board agreement or that every player feels the same way, and that probably shouldn't be a surprise. Guys come at this from different experiences and backgrounds, maybe different relationships with Devers. I think it's fair to say that there are some who would have liked Devers to be more proactive here, and after Casas went down with the season-ending injury, to volunteer to at least try to take some balls at first and see if it could work. I think there were some who wondered why the Red Sox were being so passive in asking, and that came from Cora's public remark saying that he wasn't going to suggest it, that he wasn't going to bring it up. Presumably those players didn't know that there had been a conversation between Breslow and Devers at that point. And I think there are others who are sympathetic to Devers for the reasons you noted, that, you know, he feels burned from their failure to be truthful with him over the winter. And I think there's another segment that kind of shrugs their shoulders and rolls their eyes and says, you know, hey, we've seen this before. So I don't think there's a monolithic response on the part of players. I think, you know, you could find some players in any one of those three or four camps.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Sean. He's Sean McAdam of MassLive.com. Thank you so much for joining me and Megan today, and we really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Sean.
That was Sean McAdam of MassLive. Please make sure to follow him on Twitter at Sean_McAdam. You can read him at MassLive.com as well.
Some really interesting information.
That is, there's a lot to kind of parse through there. We will get to that. We will get to all of what Sean said. We'll react to it all coming up next here. It's Mego and Shime on Boston Sports Original WEEI.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Mego and Shime on WEEI.
My first thought is everyone takes for granted, everyone being fans, media, and sometimes teams, how difficult it is to play first base. Rafael Devers has never played first base as a professional. I don't know that he's ever played it, period. And to ask him in the middle of a season to do this, it's not Bryce Harper coming off an injury training to play first base. It's not Mookie getting half a spring last year to kind of get himself situated to shortstop. It's the middle of a season. And I know, Scott, you said, well, he can take some time, just work out there. He's also a guy who has just been asked to adjust to being a DH. Took him time to do that. And now you're perhaps compromising his offense when you move him to first base if he's going to be so preoccupied with playing that position.
Mego and Shine here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. That was Ken Rosenthal on foul territory, kind of advocating for Rafael Devers in a way. We just had Sean McAdam of Mass Live on with us, and Sean offered a lot of great kind of insight and information into this whole process. And Mego, I think it is clear that the communication by the Boston Red Sox has been nothing short of deplorable with this whole Rafael Devers situation.
Dude, like, I feel like I'm at home with my Irish Catholic family, like unwilling to talk to each other, turning to one another and say, well, I don't want to be the messenger of that information, so why don't you go tell your mother? Like, that is embarrassing. What are the Red Sox doing? That information from Sean McAdam, who is so tied in with the team, mm-hmm. saying that they told Rafael Devers, while everybody on the outside knows that they're going after Alex Bregman, that it's just media speculation? That it's a narrative that the media is putting together?
Alex Cora was on the Greg Hill Show when we were down at spring training gushing about how Alex Bregman was like the perfect player.
Now, look, I don't want to let Rafi off the hook because I think
I agree with you.
I think he's being a total dweeb and a brat about the entire situation. And if they ask him to move to first base, he can grumble privately. He can bitch to his teammates in the clubhouse. He can do whatever he wants. But to get on the microphone and tell your GM to hit the bricks and go find a new first baseman is pretty freaking out of line.
Insane.
So, like, I see both sides.
Yeah.
The Red Sox are not covering themselves in glory right now.
No.
And it sounds like they're just being dysfunctional and sloppy, and they should be recognized for the mess in their house. But at the same time, when you're getting paid $313 million across 10 years, and you're the guy out of those three from 2018 that they chose to stick with, Devers has got to step up, got to rise to the occasion.
100%. And I think that's kind of what has always irked me, is that he was just, I understand that the organization handled this entire situation very poorly. They lacked communication. They lacked transparency. I totally agree. And you have every right to be pissed at Craig Breslow, the front office, Alex Cora, everybody. Totally agree. But at the same time, you need to go to work every single day and look at every other guy in that clubhouse and be able to look them in the eye and be like, I'm doing everything I can to help us win a World Series. And by coming out and giving these quotes and saying these things, you're not doing that. And that's what irks me the most. And I think you're going to, as I asked Sean, like, I think that's going to create division within the clubhouse.
Well, it's so entitled.
Yeah.
It's all about Devers. It's all about Devers. It's holding a grudge, not just from February, but seemingly
all for
from
holding
before
a grudge,
that.
Though.
Well, it's destructive. Okay,
true.
It's destructive.
Not,
in
that's
this,
not false.
In the, you can do what you want in your private life, Shime, but it's very destructive in this environment. And how about Cora saying,
yes,
if that's what you want to do, Brezzy, you go tell him.
Which is such a weaselly move. You're the manager. What? Like, because if you're
okay,
not going
to
do
Breslow's
that,
okay, but the one who wants to make the move. And Cora said, I just spent 2 months getting this brat on board with the whole DH thing.
Yeah, but Alex,
and now
that's
you're
your job.
Me I gotta move him over.
Yeah, you don't have to move him over. And that was the other thing that bugged me. Is like, this doesn't have to be done tomorrow. He didn't have to be playing first base against the Royals today.
Yeah.
Like, they have Abraham Toro, they have Romy Gonzalez, stopgap guys who can at least, you know, throw a bandage on it for a couple seconds. But eventually, you need a legitimate replacement. And if the trade market isn't there, you need to have a backup option, and that's what Rafael Devers could present. And so if Alex Cora had gone to Rafael Devers and been like, look, I know it was a whole mess in the spring training. I apologize for that. I'm sorry. The Casas injury was a complete blindside. We didn't expect like something like this to happen. Is there any way we can get you to take some ground balls at first base?
We're not asking
you to play on Saturday, but maybe in a week or two, if you feel comfortable, and we can't find a target on the trade market, we may need to put you there.
This is a park full of weasels.
Oh, 100%.
This whole park is full of weasels. You got the overweight weasel who says he doesn't want to move to first base. You got the weasel manager who's telling the weasel in the front office that he's got to go talk to that weasel and talk him into it. And you got the weasel wrangler who doesn't even talk to the public anymore, and John Henry hopping on his private jet to go out there and try to straighten this out.
I can't believe he did that.
This is so ridiculous.
Unbelievable.
It's not even mid-May yet. Nope. You got a park full of weasels.
People thought this team was going to win like 90-plus games and win the division. And there's this kind of...
I mean, they still could.
Oh, they absolutely could. They could totally rebound from this. Again, baseball, luckily for them, baseball is a marathon, not a sprint. 162-game season. They've only played 40 games.
Now it's a race of the weasels. They're all like trying to avoid each other. Oh, my God. It honestly, it feels like our workplace is what it feels like.
Sometimes. It's just like this whole, it's just an absolute mess from everybody. Everybody has screwed up here. Nobody has handled this appropriately. Alex Cora, Craig Breslow, Rafael Devers, none of them have handled this appropriately.
And I'm just joking. That was really just a shot about Keith and Courtney and the Celsius Gate.
Yeah, Celsius Gate. Oh, God.
Stealing each other's energy drinks.
Sorry, Courtney called me a rat one time. I get
what?
It. What? I think it was more in jest. We were talking about, do you remember the phenomena where everybody was like either a rat or a frog?
No.
Oh, yeah. I think it was like this whole...
Was this a social media thing?
Yeah. It was like a whole social media thing where like you look at somebody and you can tell they're either a rat or a frog. And so Courtney's like, oh, Shime, you're definitely a rat. And I was like, well, I feel more froggish, but that's okay.
I don't understand any of this. This is a conversation that is completely going over my head.
That's okay. What I do know, though, is that it seems like it is a bit of a rat race over there. And they are all just kind of... they're just like flying by the seat of their pants. Like, it's just like nobody has any foresight. Nobody has any ability to communicate.
It's frustrating to hear about. So I can't imagine what it's like inside that absolute weasel den right now.
617-779-7937. Mego and Shime here on WEEI. We've been talking Celtics. We've been talking Devers. We'll take your phone calls next here on Boston Sports Original WEEI.